Captain Wright, Reel 9. You were explaining how you were attached to the...
Under command.
And under command.
Yes.
Yeah. what sort of tasks did the colonel want you to do, normally?
Well, the first task I had to do was patrolling. I suppose... I can't think quite what my particular objective was in that, but anyway, I can remember going out on Christmas Eve... 1942, 43, and Boxing Day 43, and which wasn't a very agreeable way to spend one's festive season, I suppose, but a full moon, and we had to cross a chong, which was a tidal creek, and go across this paddy towards a hill called 124 or something, the height of it, and walk over this thing and see if there's any enemy there, which we did twice, and we reported no enemy in sight, and we attacked it on New Year's Day 1944, and I don't know how many there were, but there were two medium machine guns there, and we hit a rather wasp nest.
When you went out on this patrol, what was the strength?
I suppose, well, there was a second in command who was Jack Cargo. There was another West Kent officer, then a West 47th Rajput officer, and I suppose two soldiers.
That make five of you all together.
Yes, which is rather too many, I think.
A bit big for a recce patrol.
Yes.
A bit small for a fighting patrol.
Yes. Yes, it wasn't... I didn't think we were very clever about that. And it gave me the creeps, I think, being walking over. Because the nature of this hill was... It had some stuff called Straits Rhododendron, which was rather like a lot of Michaelmas daisies. About 4 or 5 feet high, probably, yes. A thicket of it right over the whole lot. And other bits and pieces in amongst it, I suppose. And there was a path which led up along the ridge of this thing. And the path was about a couple of feet wide, no more. And then this straight road down on either side. We were absolutely sitting ducks. It wired me stiff, especially when everything opened up on New Year's Day. I thought, bloody hell. But that's the way we did it. It was, I think, ridiculous.
What sort of distance did you cover on that occasion?
We'd been out about 4 hours. We'd probably... and I mean, we were sort of ducking down and looking around us every now and again. Not a great distance, I suppose. Not more than about a mile or a couple of miles. But I think we went right down the other side and then came back over the top. They must have thought we were crazy, but there we are.
What formation were you in for that patrol?
I hadn't really thought about this since... But I was the first man across the chong, I can remember that, because I can remember I just bought in Calcutta a watch with a luminous dial, and it was my pride and joy, and I was able to look at it as I got to the other side and found it was about 2 minutes after midnight. Yes. And so I took a look around, and then I came back down to the edge of the water, and so Jack Cargo arrived. I had to say that there was no enemy in sight. I wished him a Merry Christmas. He nearly hit me, I think. But we sort of leapfrogged along. Oh, yes, I suddenly remembered, yes. Jack Cargo, wonderful fella, he must have weighed about 16 stone, I think. And He had a cap comforter on, which made him look like an overgrown baby, really. And in one hand he had, I suppose, a 4-5 revolver. In the other hand, he had a tin of cigarettes. And when we landed from this chong, he went ahead, and we were leapfrogging across this dry paddy field, and he suddenly gave an exclamation, and we all went down, and I crawled up towards him and asked him what was wrong, and he said he had to have a cigarette. I said, you can't. We're right below this beach here, you see. I said, you can't. He said, if I don't have one, I'll scream. So we all took our battle dress tops off and made a kind of tent. And Jack Cargill lit up a cigarette and had a couple of drags. And we carried on. I mean, they were a regular regiment, a jolly good one too. But at times one felt some of our conduct was rather amateurish.
How had you got across the Chong?
Swam.
You swam. Mm. Did you see anything on that patrol or hear anything when you were cruising about on the hill?
Not a thing. That's why I was so horrified when everything opened up. Mm. They must have been dug in. Well, they were, that's one thing about them. They could dig. God, blimey, they did. Now, they were well established there. As I say, there's a medium machine gun. When we attacked, I was just behind A Company, a chap called Bunny Ansell, and he was leading this thing, and he went down with a medium machine gun burst right across him. And I forget, we had about 60 casualties within about a couple of hours, I think. And all these chaps were down below. Oh, and yes, our role had been, this was during the attack on the 1st of January, our role had been to provide duck boards to get ammunition up and casualties out over the Chong, which was tidal, at low tide. And it had mangrove on either side, you see. And so, in order that mules could manoeuvre this thing, we took these duck boards, one per man, they were made of bamboo. And we'd thought it was unoccupied. And as soon as it was low tide, we'd just bring in the ammunition and take out wounded, if any. But the thing was under fire, small arms fire, so it was pretty dodgy. And that was when we built that bridge, as I think I wrote about. It was one of my best achievements, I think. We cut down mangrove and made the uprights, the piers which we built, and I bought some string from the village, and we lashed these together, and we built 5 trestles, and undercover, because we were being fired at, and I judged the distance by eye. I thought I was rather clever with this, and we had rope and everything else we brought with us, and we tied these trestles, which were laying down flat, at about 10-foot, maybe more, intervals, and took the rope across, rushed across quickly, and when the tide was up, we floated them out. We waited for the tide to go down again, and we pulled, and they came up like a pack of cards. And all we had to do then was to lay the duck boards that we brought on this and tie them down, and we got a bridge. So we could take the wounded out, bring the ammo up, and everything was fine. At night, of course.
Was this bridge in accordance with any sort of army?
Oh, good heavens, no.
Was it your own improvised design?
Yes, yes. And I can remember the colonel, wonderful chap, he became a brigadier later, Salomons. He came down and said how pleased he was. And he said, now the gunners are trying to bring in a couple of six-pounders. Don't let them cross by any chance at all, because we must have this bridge for the ammo and the casualties, you see. So in due course, this gunner came up to me and he said, could it take £6? And I said, well, frankly, yes, I think it could. But the colonel said no. And I'm afraid I disobeyed orders, and they got £2 across, and we did quite a lot of damage with them. But I managed to weather the storm on that one.
Was there a storm?
No.
What did this hill look like when you were looking at it in daylight? You described going over it at night, that it had the straights, rhododendrons on it, and
yes,
a path. What sort of dimensions did it have? What did it look like looking at it from the avenue of attack?
Well, it was slightly L-shaped, and we were attacking at the conjunction of the two arms of the L. The path that we'd been over went up along the ridge. Wait a minute, no, I think we went along... Yes, we must have gone. It was too steep otherwise, that's right. Yes, we went along the bottom of the L, and, well, we tried to. We got about two-thirds of the way up. But,
what sort of formation was A Company in when it was advancing to contact on that attack?
Well, it was spread out. I mean, you could walk through this straight through to Denman. I suppose they put a platoon in first, which would be 30 men. I think there'd be too many. I think there'd be two sections.
There'd be two sections forward.
Yes.
And then the rest of the company would be...
Well, just behind. I mean, the two sections forward would be one left and one right. Then everybody just tailing along behind as they could, I think.
Was there any artillery support for this attack?
There was, as soon as the small arms fire opened up, yes. We had 25-pounders. We had Vulti Vengeance dive bombers. They were Indian Air Force. They were very effective. Well, they were very impressive. I don't know, they weren't effective, but they hit the target all right anyway, and I don't know, 250-pound bombs. But as I say, the Japs could dig, and they were more or less inviolate on this thing.
How were they able to get fields of fire if the thing was covered with rhododendron? I mean, had they cleared fields of fire in front of their bunkers, or
that's
were
a
they
point,
just
firing
at very short range?
Well, no, it was terribly short range. Mm. Terribly short range. I mean, the medium machine gun, at least one of them, was firing down this track that we'd gone up, you see. But I can't say I was right up at the front, but I wasn't far behind. So it's very difficult to tell what happened. Actually, this chap, Barney Ansell, he had this burst right across him, and it shattered his left femur. Went into his stomach, and he lay out there all day while we were building this bridge. And we got him over as soon as it was dark, and that was what, the 1st of January 1944. I met him purely by chance on the 17th of August 1945. In the middle of Piccadilly Circus, while we were all celebrating VJ night. And he'd just been reclassified as A1. He'd had about several feet of his gut taken out, but his shattered femur was mended, and,
he was very lucky if he'd been caught by a medium machine gun at close
range.
Yes.
He was very lucky.
So the attack went in, it met the small arms, the artillery responded, the bombers came in. Did the attack then press on, or did the Rajputs withdraw after being...
Well, they had about three goes at it, and eventually, strangely enough, uncharacteristically, the Japs pulled out. So we never actually sort of stormed the thing. The first presence actually was the West Kents, who came round the back, and we saw them standing on the ridge. but that was my introduction to jungle warfare, and it made a deep impression on me, the whole thing, really. Very difficult. Artillery, I've always been a bit sceptical about artillery. I was very... I was full of admiration, Kohima especially, when by the 3.7 mountain gun, giving a defensive fire. And the Japanese used to make an awful noise when they were forming up for an attack. You could tell exactly where they were, and this 3.7 stuff had come down, and they break the attack up. It's wonderful, wonderful weapon, that.
Must have been rather difficult to spot targets for artillery if the ground was covered in dense vegetation.
Yes, well, I suppose the way they did it, I don't know, would be to describe how much below the crest the trench was, or the bunker or whatever. And 25 pounders would do it by map, I think.
When the dive bombers came in, the Royal Indian Air Force dive bombers came in on Hill 124, how were they directed? Did you have a forward air controller with Battalion HQ? Or
that I don't know, but I remember I think they put a couple of smoke bombs out of the mortar on it. Whether it was 2-inch or 3-inch, I don't know. But
a target marking
there. Yes, yes.
Did you have a chance to see any of the Japanese positions after they'd abandoned them?
Oh, indeed.
124. How were they constructed? And
well, the answer was, I mean, they had about 3'6", I suppose, 4 foot, straight down.
Yes.
And then there'd be a dugout behind it. And so, even if you... threw grenades in. Well, I suppose if one get close, because they actually had wire there, I think, yes. If one get close enough, you could throw a bomb in, and a grenade, rather, and then attack it, I suppose. Actually, yes, I've suddenly remembered, at the time, I got closest to the Japs on that occasion. I was very close indeed. there's a thing in field engineering, Vol 2, I think it was, something out of the arc, but I can remember seeing this diagram, a thing called a fougas, or it might have been a demigas, I'm not sure. And I got we dug it in about, twice the length of this room, well, not quite, about 1.5 times as long as this room, from the trench, the Japanese trench. And the idea, you put a 44-gallon drum of oil in, and you put aluminium shavings in it, I think, which we got from some airplane wreck. And then you put it at an angle, and put a propelling charge behind it in a hole that you dug in the ground, and lit the fuse and stood back, and this enormous flame, it was like a sort of static flamethrower. And I was doing this thing, supervised digging it in and all the rest of it, when the West Kents appeared. They'd come up the other side. So I never put it into action.
What were they made of? Were they just made of pure earth, the Japanese bunkers?
Oh, yes, indeed, yes. Mm. Yes. And they were very good about disposing of the spoil, otherwise we'd have seen them.
How many men would one of their bunkers contain?
Three, four, maybe. Usually two, but I mean, I suppose they had turn and turn about. They can't have been awake the whole time.
Had they left anything behind? Anything of interest?
Not by the time I got there, I don't know. I didn't see anything there.
And you say that the Rajputs had three goes at the position. Have they managed to make any any progress, any inroads into before it was abandoned?
Well, they got very close to it, so they must have made some progress, yes, but they had pretty severe casualties.
What sort of wire had the Japanese got? You mentioned they got wire. How did they use that?
Well, it wasn't a sort of double apron or anything. It was just a couple of feet high, probably. Enough to slow you up, really, I suppose.
Was it just lying out in rolls, or had they got it picketed and
stretched? Picketed and stretched, yes.
Did they have any mines or booby traps?
They did have, but there weren't any on this occasion.
Not on that occasion. What happened after that, then, after the fighting on Hill 124? Were you still attached to the Rajputs?
Yes, we went on to Rasabil Fortress. That was a bit further down. More patrolling round that.
Was this the same kind of patrolling, going out in the moonlight with officers and men?
Well, this one, no, this one, well, I forget how many, but one I went on at Rasabil was myself and a tank officer. And my Havildar, which was a sergeant, and a sapper, I think, four of us. And we were out for 2 days, two days and a night, which is a bit hair-raising. Went right round to see whether the tanks could get in behind it. I can remember with some alarm, we were lying up during the day on one of these hillocks and keeping very quiet. And there was a noise of Japanese around the place. And suddenly we heard footsteps tearing up the side of this thing. We thought, oh Christ, this is it. It was a couple of wild pig. Came straight through us.
What did you learn then from that patrol? Were you able to map the Japanese positions or find...
No, all we were looking for were approaches for tanks, really. Which were sort of dried up nullahs.
Did you find a route?
Well, we found a number of possibilities. We didn't know where people were. But we looked at the map afterwards and we could find out which places were we could offer as an approach, yes.
Did you have good maps? Were they well surveyed and accurate?
Oh, yes, I've got some. I'll show them to you, yes.
So you went on patrol a day and then another night. How far were you going on that occasion, do you think? What sort of distance?
Oh, not in long, about a couple of miles, 2.5 maybe in and 2.5 out.
What was the ground like?
Well, much the same as all round there. There's foothills to a range of what we'd call mountains, but they're called hills, the Pegu Yoma.
Did you manage to get any idea of what strength the Japanese were?
No, none. As I said, they were usually very noisy when they were coming into attack, but in defence they were very silent. No, I had no idea.
You mentioned that Razabil was a fortress. How was it fortified?
Well, the earthworks, the same as they all did, really. It was just a larger feature than most.
Did you get involved in attacking it?
No, that was 47th Large. No, I didn't. No. Well, I did in a way. I just thought, yes, they had a go at it unsuccessfully once or twice, and they thought they'd use the Strategic Air Force, which was American, and liberators were coming in to pound this thing, you see. And we'd had some experience of the Americans, and we decided it was a good idea that we abandoned the forward defended localities for a very short time and went back to a safe distance, which was about a mile, I think. And I was, because I was still under command, I was asked to simulate the continued presence of the 7th Rajputs in the forward localities whilst they were not actually there. And I fixed up a lot of, I don't know whether they worked or not, sort of pops and bangs and various things.
Well, these are automatic devices.
Yeah, so we had a thing called a delayed fuse. It was a acid and metal, and I did some for sort of half an hour and one for 15 minutes or something like that. So these things popped and banged very madly. And I can remember, because of this, I was the last man out of the forward defended localities. The whole battalion had retired about a mile, you see. And when I had finished, I went back and joined them. And the bombers came over and they dropped one or two on the fortress. They dropped a lot on the local village and all around. And they weren't a great success at all. They killed the 47th Rajput Subedar Major, which is a regimental sergeant major. So it wasn't a very good day. But I was humiliated on the journey back. As we went forward again to rejoin our positions, reoccupy our positions, I went by jeep and I had to pass a dead cow that had been killed by the Americans, and it had about 9 vultures on it. Now, vultures were a protected species and we weren't allowed to kill them, but I'm afraid I disobeyed orders. They looked so revolting. And I went up about as near as I am to that fireplace, I think, took out my personal weapon, which was a 4.5 Webley, so heavy I could hardly lift it, pointed it in the middle of these 9 vultures, fired a 4.5 bullet lead into the whole bloody lot, and as one bird they all took off and flew off, which isn't saying much for my marksmanship.
Did you find that the position was still there when you got back to them, the forward position?
Oh, yes.
The Japanese hadn't twigged that you'd been away.
No, well, I doubt if it had been of much advantage for them if they had, because they were much better placed where they were, weren't they, I think.
What were you doing for the battalion day by day when you weren't actually involved in attacks? Was there, you know, were the sappers called on for anything on a routine basis?
I can remember vaguely. I didn't